Are you ready?
James. Yes.
Let's call this HESS committee meeting to order. It is 3:06, and it is Thursday, March 3rd. With us are Representative Cott, Representative Gary Davis, Representative Cynthia Toohey, Representative Harley Olberg, and myself, Con Bundy. I'll be presiding. We have before us today House Bill 337, Drug-Free Recreation and Youth Centers, HJR 52, Increase in Federal Medicaid Funding. Both these were held over from yesterday. Hearing today and to be teleconferenced are HB 356, Living Wills and Medical Care Orders, and House Bill 506, Student Loan Program. And we will begin with House Bill 337, Drug-Free Recreational Youth Centers. Representative Nordland is the prime sponsor. I understand you have a CS you'd like us to adopt.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps you'd like me to talk to the original bill first, and then I explain what the CS is.
The floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this bill is really a very simple concept. Currently in law, we have a part of the law that sets up drug-free school zones. It was passed several years ago. And what that does is basically increases the penalties for individuals who are caught in possession of drugs in school areas. This bill would expand those zones to also include recreation and youth centers that are operated by and this gets the one of my amendments that the CS would make it so that this youth and recreation centers that are operated by the municipality and by the state. The reason for introducing this bill is that there is a real problem, as noted in my sponsor statement, that in the recreation centers, particularly in my community in Anchorage. I represent an area that's that has the Spinard Rec Center in it. It would also apply to, in Anchorage at least, the Fairview Rec Center, the Mountain View Rec Center. Chief of Police Kevin O'Leary has mentioned that the areas around recreation and youth centers are fertile ground for those who promote and sell drugs to kids. Officer Patrick O'Brien, a police and school liaison officer with the municipality, says that the parking lot of the Fairview Recreation Center is a site of a huge drug trade. The director of the Spinard Recreation Center says that there's a local drug dealer who lives across the street from the Spinard Recreation Center. It's a very simple concept. It would increase the penalties for those folks who are caught in possession of drugs around these rec centers, and carries no fiscal note. And that's with the original bill. That's basically the thrust of the bill. What my CS would do is a couple things. The original bill is drafted so broadly as to be difficult to enforce, because it said original rec operated by public or nonprofit entities. We've narrowed that so it makes it more easy to enforce it. Just say rec centers operated by the municipality or by the state. And also, there's another section of the bill that states that the municipalities may post signs indicating drug-free zones. There's not a mandate that they do so therefore there's not necessarily a fiscal impact to the municipalities. It just depends on whether or not they want to do it. So,
I think Representative
Chewy has a question. Then how do people know it's drug-free? I mean, how do the bad guys know that they can't step over this line?
Well, one of the things, of course, is that as some of them get caught, they'll realize that the penalties are more severe than they used to be. And another thing is that as bills like this move through the legislative process, they receive some attention and word gets out to the public through media sources that we've decided to get tougher on drug dealers in these areas.
Excuse me, one more question.
If I might note that Representatives BZ, Bryce, and Nikolai have joined us.
How much does a sign cost?
Madam Chair, I can't answer that question. I don't know.
I might observe, having some experience, that the all-weather has a couple $100 a piece.
That might be something that the rec center could have a bake sale or something for to be able to put these things up.
Right.
Because it's something that needs to be, I think, up and out.
Cost of a couple grow lights, I think.
Moving on. Representative Nordland, would you, the thrust of the CS that tightens it up to municipal recreational centers.
Right, municipal and state operated.
All right.
I move that we adopt the draft as the working draft.
Okay, it's been moved that we adopt the CS for House Bill 337. Are there any objections? Hearing none. So this is adopted. We have before you now CS for House Bill 337. Do we have any other testimony? All right.
Mr. Chairman, I just might add that I did not ask for people to come out and testify on this bill because I thought the concept was pretty simple and didn't need a lot of explanation. There are a lot of letters of support over for the bill that you'll see in your packets.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure I didn't leave anybody out, is all. I wasn't searching for that. Further questions for Representative Nordland? Seen as Representative Over.
Could that be characterized as kind of a left-handed compliment?
That
we didn't need too many people to explain this to us?
Well, I don't know. I'll have to talk with the Norwegians and find out if that's it.
If you needed somebody to explain this, then there would have been real bad problems.
Well, moving forward, we will close public testimony on House Bill 337, and I would ask the wishes of the committee. Representative Bryce.
I move and ask unanimous consent that we move CS for HB 337 Hess from committee with individual recommendations.
And accompanying zero fiscal note, I assume.
Accompanying zero fiscal note, precisely.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, I will continue my violation of the open meetings law by passing this by acclamation. That brings us to HDR 52, increase in federal Medicaid funding. And Representative Nordland, you're still on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate you hearing these bills together to save me making a couple trips down to the committee. I really appreciate that. HDR 52 is an issue, is a resolution that deals with the matter of fairness for the state of Alaska. Currently, the federal Medicaid rates vary nationwide from 50 to 79%, and it's based on the relative per capita income of the various states. The problem is that Alaska does not fare very well under the system since, although we have a very high cost of living, and therefore the Medicaid rate is set at its lowest level at 50%, we also have a very high cost of living. The way the reimbursement rate is set does not take into account that high cost of living we have in the state. So the purpose of this resolution is to ask Congress to amend the Social Security Act to take into account the high cost of living and set the differential, taking that into consideration. There's an additional disadvantage to Alaska based on the way the Medicaid rates are set for our state in that although the cost of living is considered in terms of deciding who is eligible to receive Medicaid, therefore increasing the Medicaid pool, in turn, we do not receive the difference in receiving a greater amount of money, or we don't. That's not taken into consideration. The cost of living is not taken into consideration in setting the rate. If the reimbursement rate represented, if we had a 25% increase, which is approximately what the cost of living difference is for the state, it would mean for the Medicaid program alone an additional $31 million to the state of Alaska. And this is $31 million because you'd be changing the percentage from 50 to 68%. That means that the state would not have to match that. It would be simply an additional $31 million from the federal government. The resolution also recognizes the work that Senator Stevens has been doing in Congress to try to get this changed. And with that, I'll end my testimony. I also might mention that Kim Bush from the Division of Medical Assistance is here to testify to explain in more detail what this resolution is trying to accomplish.
Do you have questions for Representative Nordland? If not, I'd like to call Kim Bush forward.
Thank you. sign it.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kim Bush. I'm the director of the Division of Medical Assistance, and I'm here to tell you that the department strongly supports HJR 52. As you just heard, the Medicaid federal matching percentage is based on a formula that's based on per capita income in Alaska, and there's a floor put in to the formula of 50%. And because of that floor, actually, Alaska gets 50%. If the floor wasn't there, we'd actually have a lower match rate by that formula. And it also, this formula is used also for AFDC and jobs and some other federally funded programs. And as you heard, the federal government uses a 25% cost of living differential to set the poverty level in Alaska, and also when they're looking at certain other health facility rates in the upper limits for those rates. But they, although they tell us that we must cover people, for example, in the program at 133% of poverty or 100% of poverty, depending on which part of the program, they then tell us they aren't going to participate in the cost of covering those people using the same kind of formula differential. And the real result for FY94 is $48.8 million in federal funds that we aren't getting in this state. And we just looked at that again. It looks like about $33 million in Medicaid and $15.7 million in AFDC. I haven't calculated out what it would be in jobs and the other programs because it's of course, smaller. They're smaller programs. It's still probably a few million dollars. Senator Stevens has inserted the provision with Alaska-specific language in the Chafee bill, which is one of the health reform bills, which is one of the two that he has given some support to. I think it's especially critical that this is inserted in Title 19 of the Social Security Act now, because all of the health reform legislation before Congress is using this same formula. And Alaska is seriously disadvantaged. The only other state that's so affected is Hawaii, because Hawaii also is given a different, they have a higher cost of living, and they are given a different poverty level, just like Alaska is, although theirs is somewhat lower. It's about 16% differential. And Hawaii's governor and Hawaii is their delegation is also supporting changes.
Questions for Ms. Bush?
Just a question. When will this take effect?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Toohey, this is a resolution, of course, that would take effect when it's adopted by this legislature. It would go to our people in Congress and our governor to show our support. If the Congress moved this, it would take effect in the next Omnibus Reconciliation Act, which would be passed out this fall.
Thank you, Kim.
Further questions? Hearing none, we'll close public testimony and recognize Representative Bryce.
Mr. Chair, I move and ask unanimous consent that we move HJR 52 out of HESS with individual recommendation.
And I must object just to explain my no vote. certainly like to see Alaska get more money, but the federal dollars come from the general public's pocket, and this notion that if we just get a bunch more money from the feds, it's free money, it disturbs me. I think the whole Medicaid program is wildly out of control, and Alaska should perhaps lead by example and not ask for extra money. The cost of living in urban Alaska is not that much greater than urban areas on the West Coast. If a differential was for rural Alaska, perhaps, but I must vote no on this. Representative Veazey.
Yes, I would just like to comment what would happen if, for instance, the cost of living in Anchorage turned out to be lower than Washington, D.C.?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to address two things. I'd like to address your question first, of course, Representative Veazey. If certainly if the cost of living changed dramatically and we no longer had a higher cost of living in Alaska, then we certainly wouldn't need this differential, and we also wouldn't need it to determine who's eligible for the program, and so that would be fair. Right now we suffer from a grossly unfair situation. The people that are mandated that we serve and that we put up state dollars for, which is we have to buy coinsurance and deductible under federal law for people that aren't even eligible for our state Medicaid program, people who are at 120% of poverty level, and they use Alaska poverty level, that 25% cost of living differential is figured into that. Federal government mandates we spend our dollars to do that. They mandate that we cover these people, and yet they do not participate, and that's grossly unfair to our state. If that changed, if it suddenly became less expensive to live in Alaska, then we wouldn't need it. But they don't base it on just the Anchorage cost of living. So that is not the issue. It's not Anchorage versus Washington, D.C. It's the overall cost of living in Alaska. And I frankly don't expect that to decrease substantially in the next decade. It certainly hasn't been true since I've lived in Alaska, which has been some time. The other issue that I'd like to address, if I may, Mr. Chairman, is in order to fund this, Congress must find savings. It has to be neutral. And so they will find savings within Title 19 to fund this for Alaska. And it is certainly true that many other congressmen have been able to act for their states to get consideration for their states. And I think Alaska certainly is well served by our congressman, but has not been well served in the match situation for this program or AFDC.
Representative Bryce.
Maybe to help alleviate some of your concerns, better to buy, have this money come to the state in the form of extra federal money for Medicaid, Medicare, whatever, than to be buying whatever on the East Coast for non-productive use, which is another thing that our federal government's known for. Buicks are bombs, that's what I'm saying. Buicks are bombs.
It's federal, it's free. Representative Gary Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I somewhat agree with your discussion about spending federal dollars, but this is also this is a match program that is, it's a mandate from the feds. It's and it's a match program, so it's costing state dollars. It's at the current rate, the mandate from the feds is mandating that the state spend so many dollars. Under this resolution, the mandate is that the state will not need to spend so much dollars. So I can certainly agree with that.
Further discussion. Representative Nicolai.
Yeah, also in the rural perspective, it's there is definitely a higher cost of living out there. It's a higher cost of transportation. Therefore, it's very expensive for the rural people to go to Anchorage and Fairbanks for medical treatment. A lot of times they let their illnesses go, and then the illnesses get too far, and then we have people dying. I've seen it time and time again that these people are dying, and they shouldn't be dying. I mean, dying of pneumonia is just piddly compared to what could have been. But I just see that the Medicaid dollars could go very far for those people. And another thing that we're neglecting is that we're also talking about children. A large percentage of the people that are on Medicaid are children. And so a no vote is just denying them of better services. And as far as jobs program in here, I told you before that in my past experiences, I've tried to send people to the jobs program, and because the funding is so limited, there are just a limited amount of people that that are able to go to training, and so we're leaving these people. We're just not letting them get the full benefits that they could get. So I just think that this bill should be passed out of this committee. I think it's a good bill.
Just a question for you, if I might. Realize not everyone lives in rural Alaska, is an Alaska Native, but aren't they covered under the Native Health Service? And why would they then not accept service because the service is there?
Because the federal funding is also limited in the Indian Health Services. They've had a lot of federal cuts as well. And so a lot of people are turning to Medicaid. And having no jobs out there, they really don't have the financial. They don't have the finances to finance a trip to Fairbanks or to Anchorage. So, and that's probably the reason why we have a high number of cancer deaths in rural Alaska in the interior. Right now, we have the highest number of deaths from cancer in the interior and for the whole state of Alaska.
Hearing no further discussion, would you call the roll, Arlene?
Representative Cynthia Tuohy?
Yes.
Representative Con Bundy?
No.
Representative Gary Davis?
Yes.
Representative Al Beazie?
No.
Representative Peacock?
Yes.
Representative Harley Oldberg?
Yes.
Representative Betty Davis is excused. Representative Irene Nicolai?
Yes.
Representative Tom Bray?
Yes.
All right, thank you, Ms. Bush, and thank you, Representative Nordland. And our apologies again
but
for
yesterday.
Bringing you back, but you're always welcome to grace our presence.
Welcome.
Okay.
All right, that brings us to House Bill 356, Living Wills. And
the big T.
Someone with more will to live than most anyone people. Else I know, Representative Tuohy, as the prime
Thank
sponsor.
You, sir. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the committee.
I always Thank use you. The word distinguished.
Distinguished, ladies and gentlemen of the committee.
He has a greater need to court favor than you do,
however. Thank you very much. House Bill 356 is an act relating to living wills and do not resuscitate orders and providing for the effective date. House Bill 356 complements the current statute on the rights of the terminally ill by adding specific recognition of do not resuscitate orders to the existing legislation on the rights of the terminally ill to make a declaration relating to the use of life-sustaining procedures. A new section allows attending physicians to issue do not resuscitate orders, requires the Department of Health and Social Services, with the approval of the State Medical Board, to issue regulations adopting a standardized protocol governing the withholding of CPR by physicians and other health care providers, and establishes the requirement under which health care providers other than physicians must comply with do not resuscitate orders. Section 1812.037 requires the Department of Health and Social Services to develop standardized design for do not resuscitate identification cards, forms, necklaces, bracelets to indicate that the possessor has executed a living will or that a DNR, do not resuscitate order, has been issued by a physician. Other provisions of the bill amend existing statutory provisions by including DNRs along with living wills in areas such as immunity for health care providers acting under the provisions of living wills and DNR orders and penalties, etc. Do not resuscitate orders are issued only in the case of terminally ill. Under existing practices, emergency response providers, EMTs, ambulance drivers, and paramedics are required to institute CPR on site, even if the sick person has a living will. A properly executed DNR order and procedural protocol recognized by all concerned parties would help to avoid futile and unwanted intervention. Similarly, within healthcare institutions, DNR orders are necessary in the absence of a living will when attempts to resuscitate serve only to prolong the process of dying. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're certainly welcome, Ms. Chairperson. questions of Representative Tuohy? We have a number of people on teleconference and people here that would like to testify, so if we keep your questions
okay. Okay. Maybe it'll come up earlier. The memo from Craig Lewis. Maybe if we could address some of those
issues. Will be on teleconference.
But he'll be on
It's Chris Lewis, I believe, but he will be on
Craig.
Teleconference.
No.
Craig. Well, my information is incorrect. It's the first time my super staff has ever failed. Representative Veazey.
Thank you. Representative Tuohy, I'd like to ask you to explain the penalty section, if you would, please.
The penalty section?
Section 5.
Section 5. I think it's fairly well self-explanatory. If you resuscitate in a hospital where you are charging a fee, this if you're not complying with the do not resuscitate order, you won't be paid.
Okay, then this is existing law, but we have a $1,000 civil penalty in there?
Apparently that's existing law.
We're going through and amending this statute.
Meant to read, right.
I fail to see the merit of hammering somebody with a $1,000 civil penalty. Do you think that's in the best interest of the bill, or I mean, I realize it's existing law, but we are amending that section, so.
Well, I what it was, Mr. What's his name, Craig? Maybe he could answer that.
Let us go to public testimony. Hold that question in abeyance, and perhaps we'll get that addressed. I would like to start here in Juneau, then we'll go to Fairbanks, Mat-Su, Petersburg, Seward, and Sitka. Here in Juneau, we have with us to testify on House Bill 356, Mark Johnson. Mark, if you would join us here and state your name for the record. Representative Tuohy, can you...
Let me move it over.
Make a little room. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Mark Johnson. I'm the chief of the Emergency Medical Services Section for the Department of Health and Social Services. Briefly, I just want to say we support this legislation. We emergency care providers are trained to aggressively care for patients, and I believe that they do so enthusiastically whenever there is even the slightest hope of success. On the other hand, there are patients terminally ill, for example, who there's really not much point in prolonging the discomfort. And when those patients, in consultation with their physician, choose to have a do not resuscitate order in place, then I think the emergency care providers that I have talked to would prefer that and respect that, and this bill provides a mechanism for us to do that in a standardized way throughout the state. So essentially we support the bill, and maybe after I get a chance to listen to some of the other comments, I could give you our thoughts on any of the other issues that are brought up. And I know we also have Captain Steve Eha from Juneau, and they do have a DNR system in place here that I believe works fairly well, and he can maybe explain that for you.
All right, thank you very much. And I would observe for those that are on teleconference and here in Juneau for House Bill 506, I expect that we will get beat of that bill probably by 4 o'clock. Also here in Juneau to testify, Vonna Hall.
My name is Vonna Hall. I live in Juneau. I'm on the AARP Legislative Capital City Task Force. They have asked me to speak in support of this bill. We have about 43,000 members in Alaska, and that's about all I have to say for AARP, but I would like to speak personally. I misunderstood my instructions and came yesterday prepared to, with a nice, neat testimony about my own experience as an accountant with clients and with many friends. I have helped them. I was going to scatter a couple of horror stories about the expense and emotional expense to clients who have had devastating effects from too much terminal care, and then speak of when I was in Anchorage 2 years ago to an older Alaska commission. They had conferences and seminars on living wills. I attended those most gleefully, picked up the papers, and my husband and I drove home from Fairbanks talking about them all the way, filled them out, scattered them everywhere, made sure our children had copies. And last night, after a quiet bridge game here in town, I drove home, found my husband on the ice in the driveway. He had fallen, broken a hip, had laid in the rain for an hour and a half. I called the ambulance. Fortunately, none of this has required our use of the living will. But life is very uncertain.
You had us very nervous.
I had a lot of time last night to think of the might have beens if I had not come home when I did, if it had been as cold as it was a couple of weeks ago. And I was thinking of, had this very much in my mind, but this isn't just for old people. When we think of the terminally ill, we think in terms of the aged. It isn't. It's everybody who goes snowmobiling. It's everybody who drives a car or walks in front of a car. I have seen to it that my children are aware by single-parent children have signed these. I've given copies to many of my friends. But life is very uncertain, and I cannot urge too highly any emphasis in the living will. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Is your husband still in the hospital, obviously?
He's being operated on right now.
Wonderful.
And I'm going back to join the Walking the Floor Brigade.
well, we're very grateful for you to take the time.
Thank you.
This is too much on my mind not to take the time. Right. Thank you.
Tell your husband, please, we wish him the best.
Thank you. I'll do that.
Rup, would you like to testify? Okay, thank you. Then we will go to Fairbanks and Kurt Lewis, is it? Craig Lewis, thank you.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, certainly can. Please go ahead.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for allowing me to join the teleconference. I am Craig Lewis, C-R-A-I-G, so that dialogue should be cleared now.
Abundantly.
Thank you, Chris.
I guess I should also add my, to those of you who are distinguished, that you all are, it pleases me to be able to address you. I had sent a memo to Representative Huey and Representative Bundy concerning the bill, and I'm not sure if everyone has it. Is it available there?
Mm-hmm. Everyone has a bill in their packet, so go right ahead, please. I think a summary would be fine, and then we could ask specific questions, if you would.
Okay. In summary, I think it's important that the language be very, very clear. There are a number of places in the bill where words such as attending physician, which in a clinical setting are relatively clear, but in a rural setting are totally unclear, could be enhanced. And so in a number of places, you'll hear me refer to specific words, and when I'm looking at those, I'm asking that you consider maybe expanding the definition intending by, from the standpoint that it's the customary family physician with whom they've been dealing. Does that mean attending because it's a specialist that deals with a particular disease? And I think in a lot of cases, you may conclude these are regulatory issues and may be addressed in regulation. On the other hand, when you get into definitions, it becomes a debate on whether they should be in statute or regulation, and that's why I bring them up. In another area, dealing with CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation is a process of hands-on patient care. And I think when you refer to it in the do not resuscitate order configuration, you need to specify artificial exchange of oxygen or artificial, actually inflating someone's lungs or compressing someone's chest. If you don't do that, a provider might conclude that you mean don't put an oxygen mask on their face. Oxygen masks don't resuscitate patients. Position the head. Positioning the head may open an airway and they breathe spontaneously on their own where they may not have otherwise. And so withholding resuscitative efforts needs to really be special in dealing with the process. Artificially depressing the chest. In other places, like the state of Virginia and others, are very, very careful on how they define those terms. I'm concerned that this particular legislation isn't as rurally oriented as it could be. The place where it's really complex is in a place where there are no physicians, where people are actually sent home to die, where the responders may be neighbors. It needs to be really clear the mechanism that needs to be in place to address that. And withholding CPR or the cessation of CPR. Someone might have been doing it for an extraordinarily long period of time, hours of administering CPR, and not be able to get this patient anywhere near a physician, let alone an attending physician, and a patient literally dead, but the provider is still doing CPR. So it's important to address that particular type of an issue. The use of the word qualified, as it appears in lines 17 or 11 through 17, on
Craig, what page are you talking about?
I'm talking about page 3, under section 5.